Slam podcast. I'm Andrew McGregor, and with each installation of this podcast, we're going to explore the world of spirituality, what it means to be alive, and how is it that we can bring our spiritual selves, tarot, meditation, religious or spiritual practices, into our daily lives. Please check out all of our episodes at thehermitslamp.com/podcasts, or you can search The Hermit's Lamp in podcasts on iTunes and download them all directly that way. If you are looking for card-by-card instruction on reading the tarot, please consider checking out James Wells and my new audio project, The Trumps Card-by-Card, where we dig in deep to one of the major cards and explore it thoroughly. If that sounds exactly like what you're looking for and gets your tarot juices all fired up, you can certainly also find that at thehermitslamp.com/podcasts. So welcome to another episode of The Hermit's Lamp Podcasts. I'm here recording today with Enrique Enriquez, and I have no idea where this conversation is going to go, which is part of what's very exciting about it. You know, Enrique is a very spontaneous person, someone who pushes the boundaries of tarot and art and words, and really kind of stretches at least my imagination. So I think it's going to be fascinating. So Enrique, for people who might not know you, can you say a little bit about yourself?
Hi. Well, thank you for having me, first of all, and I'm really happy to be here talking to you, and thank you for everybody who will listen to this. We are speaking to the future, recording something that will be, it's nice to have that idea of the voice will be heard elsewhere in another time. What can I tell you about me? I guess all my life I have had an interest for what now I think is mystery, a form of mystery. And I think that that sense of mystery is more often than not associated with images, either things we find on the street, things we make, things we shuffle, light, dark cards. So for years, I have been trying to find my way around that world of forms. I like ice cream. The ice cream is very important to me at night, hidden when my kids are not watching. for a while now, yes, the tarot has been the main source for mystery. Or for that, for creating some sort of training towards an awareness of happenstances. Also, through the tarot, I discovered poetry, and through poetry, I understood that language, the alphabet itself, is another oracle or another way to find or experience that mystery. So I try to experience that daily.
Excellent. So have you always been comfortable with the mystery? Has that always been something that has appealed to you or held sway, or has it been something that you've kind of come to terms with or fallen in love with over time?
Well, I think the main shift in my personal experience has been that for years I thought that the name for that thing I longed for was the absurd. Absurdity. And I remember I spent my high school years very entertained, not for the right reasons, but creating pranks and things to bother my teachers that were never nasty. They were always nonsensical. Eventually I understood that the absurd is the foundation of mystery. I mean, if you face the absurd and you just laugh, it dies there and that's it. But if you go beyond that initial laughter, which is a reaction of surprise, but also could be a reaction of fear or just a reaction of a defensive reaction of not understanding what you're experiencing, you go deeper, then you find mystery. You find things that cannot be necessarily accounted for with words. And it's a very strange situation that is, it makes life more interesting.
For sure. Yeah, I think of some of the most powerful moments I've had, you know, where somebody has said something to me or a card or something has been revealed to me, predominantly about myself, and what at the time felt like my own hypocrisy or, you know, desire to avoid my issues became revealed, and sort of the multiple points of it, you know, the behavior that was completely out of line with what I was stating or whatever, you know, comes to the forefront. And that absurdity of it, I think, is such a better phrase, you know, because people are often will call the, you know, spiritual people who aren't 100% spiritual all the time, you know, or Hippocratic, you know, they point to hypocrisy in there. But I think that absurdity is inherent in the world. I think it's inherent in being alive.
Yes. Well, if you think about it, I mean, my personal feeling, and this is a recipe to dispel clients. If you want to get rid of a client or a potential client, just tell them that asking questions to pieces of cardboard is absurd. Mm. And that's why they can answer anything.
Yes.
Most people can live with that cognitive dissonance, so they run away. So if you want to get rid of a client, that's a perfect way to do it. But if they don't run away, or we are not running away, you realize that once you go beyond reason or what is reasonable, then a lot of things can happen that weren't there before. I mean, if we spend our lives avoiding the absurd, we basically, I mean, it may be a straight line, but in a sense, it's a line that ends with us ending where we started, you know.
Mm-hmm.
People reject the absurd, usually. They assume that absurdity is asking for them an act of attention that is empty or is useless. And people reject the useless. But I think that there is not only beauty, but a lot to be gained from useless gestures. Actually, my the only faith I may have in the tarot or in poetry is by the fact that it's completely useless. I see it as, especially poetry, I see it as not the solution to anything. And that's why I trust it.
Mm. Well, yeah, it's a big difference where something promises to be the panacea and the solution for everything, right? Come see me. I know everything. I will tell you everything.
It's like, yeah.
Well, and especially it happens in the tarot world or in the world of readers. You see so many people that promise everything. They know everything. They will solve any problem. They have the solution for whatever you are experiencing, the pain you have. And it's a world of overselling. It's a world of overclaiming. So I always feel more confident by claiming that I know nothing. I have no solution for anything, and I don't even have, you know, I something that has changed recently in terms of my life is that I realize that I'm not looking for answers. I'm just looking for better questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I talked to Lon Duquette a few years back in a podcast, and he said that you know, it's a matter of waiting for the right question to appear, and then that's the resolution of the issue. Everything else after that is just follow through. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's no sense. I think it's I trust the question, not necessarily the answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a difference between contraction and expansion or crystallization and things that are organic. And a question is always expanding. An answer contracts. It's the end. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Most answers are a false end. It wasn't really an ending there. It's just a provisional one.
Yeah, well, you know, I see that in people who are seeking to define themselves as things too, right? You know, I mean, I run a store here in Toronto, so I meet a lot of people on all points of their journey, you know, and I meet people who are, you know, the newest, you know, angelic healer or something, tarot practice, something, you know, and they have gone and they have learned something and maybe very, very helpful. But the moment at which they have defined themselves as I am this thing, then number one, it's already wrong because they're continuing to change anyway. And number two, they've pigeonholed themselves, right, into something that becomes problematic as life continues.
Yes, I think that's very interesting because sadly the reality or the reality around us seems to demand our definition, our own definition. We need to go around telling people what we are. And here in the States, it took me years to realize that there is something interesting when people ask you, what did you do? Mm-hmm. They are not really asking you what you do, what is what you do. What they want to know is how you make your money.
Yes.
It's completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a while, and it was because of a guy from Canada who came and I asked him, okay, what do you do? You know, and he spent 15 minutes explaining to me that back in Canada, I am a doctor, but here my wife is the one that works, so she brings the money. And of course, I had no interest in knowing about his wife's dealings. I asked the guy what he was, you know. And I told him, well, but it's funny because, okay, you can't practice medicine here, but you don't forget how to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. Only because you cross an imaginary line that is a frontier. You know, you're still a doctor. You're still a person who understands the human body or understands physiology, understand how to heal people. Of course, he's many other things too. But it's funny that not only the narrowness of this is my label, but also the even more narrow aspect of this is how I earn my living.
Mm-hmm.
Which is... it's really boring.
It is, right? I like to ask, I mean, number one, when people ask me what I do, sometimes I tell them I'm an accountant. Because if I go to a party and I don't feel like talking about work and people find out that I'm a tarot reader, then that's all they want to talk about all night. And I get passed around, hey, Andrew's a tarot reader. You should, you know, I'm just like, oh, no. I'm an accountant. Nobody asks an accountant questions at a party, or at least in my experience. But so the question that I do like to ask people, though, is what are you excited about? What is captivating you at this point in time? And then you can have a conversation about something very different, you know, whatever it is, right?
Yes, I agree. I think to me it was always hard when I was doing readings because you need people to know what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, life works, business works. But and over time, I guess in the last 3-4 years, I start hearing people who knows me introducing me to other people as a poet.
Mm.
I think that at one level, that made them more comfortable because at least I live in a reality in which being a tarot reader is not the coolest thing you can be. You know, you're at a party, as you say, and somebody say, I'm a stockbroker. The others say, I'm a realtor. The other one says, I'm an architect. And then you say, I'm a tarot reader. And of course, everybody wants to talk to you because they have never, it's like, I don't know, meeting a unicorn.
Exactly.
But then I start listening to all these people, my wife, my friends, you know, introducing me to other people as a poet, and that made me very nervous because I don't know what I am. I don't know what label to apply. I feel that I'm an exile in every single world, in the world of tarot or the world of poetry or the world of art or the world of magic. I don't feel necessarily that I am that thing, but I'm like the intersection of all those mandorlas, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow I'm a little bit of this and that, but I'm just a person that is walking around and trying to find something to do to amuse myself until it's time to go to bed.
To have your ice cream first, right?
Yes, it's always at that moment. And but then, yes, I think that finding what excites people is way more, which again, it becomes very abstract then, because, I mean, I'm very excited by language, by words, by poetry. But... for example, a couple of weeks back, maybe more, I spent an entire week very excited about this thing I read from Tristan Tzara, the Dadaist poet, and he say that the job of a poet is to find crocodiles on the street,
mm-hmm.
and a crocodile is as viable as poetry, as a sonnet, and I thought this is perfect. But how, it's very hard to talk to people about that excitement.
So, you know, I find that fun, the idea of crocodiles in the street and the absurdity of it too, because when I'm out with my kids, everything can be anything. right? Anything can be fascinating. Any little stray piece of something can be magical and spawn a whole story or hours of entertainment or whatever, you know? And I think that, you know, I mean, as we age or as people age, a lot of that gets misplaced, you know? And I think bringing that back and raising awareness of that is such a wonderful thing.
Yes. Well, it's complicated. Yeah, I see it with my kids. I think my two of my three kids like drawing, like to draw. And I think that drawing is just a way of thinking. But then, you know, my fear always is, okay, there will be a time in which somebody is going to decide that it's time for them to learn how to draw properly.
Mm.
Which is the end of it, basically. Because properly is so relative in this time and age, you know. And the way they draw is the right way to draw.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that with creativity in general, Dries Van Noten, a Belgian fashion designer, that says he was asking in an interview, okay, if you could do something to promote creativity in children, what would you do? And he say nothing. What we need to do is to find things to promote creativity on teenagers, because they are constantly being told to grow up, to be serious, and to become useful. So that's the moment when creativity ends. You know?
Sure.
You're not supposed to draw anymore. You are not supposed to play anymore. You are not supposed to imagine things anymore. Of course, it's so strange, because I think that if there is something that requires fantasy and a love for fiction and imagination, it's Wall Street. We love Wall Street. We respect Wall Street. And still, we try to teach our kids that imagining things or creating imaginary things is not okay.
Well, one of the best and worst things I did was go to art school for 4 years. You know, I mean, I left art school basically being like, you know what? I don't want anything to do with artists or artwork or any of it anymore. And it's only in, you know, it took me 15 years to come back around to actually being interested in sharing what I was doing creatively with the world. You know, it just basically was like, you know what? This is just too much, you know? So.
Well, yeah, it's funny, because I think that one of the reasons why I took an interest in the tarot was because I wanted the tarot to free me from art. And I still long for that freedom. I understand that I also went to an art school. I was an artist and I started out as a painter, did shows and all this stuff. And I found at some point that I was absolutely boring and I didn't want to anything to do with that reality in those terms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And at some point, you know, there is something very liberating when you're looking at tarot cards that you didn't make. And you can talk about drawing, shape, forms, colors, all these things, without the ego aspect of, look at what I did.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
this happening. Look at how wonderful this image is. And the other person doesn't have to relate to it in base of, okay, let me say something nice because he made it.
Or yeah.
Say something smart because, no, just look at it. You know? So there is a certain level of freedom there. But I still think that, it's funny, I still think that in art, it's maybe the only space where you can have a conversation that can be purposely full useless.
Mm.
You can ask questions that don't demand answers, and they have value in themselves, which is something that you can't afford in science or in engineer or medicine. You know, things, specific things in which you need specific answers to solve specific problems. So there is a freedom there, even if, for example, when people say, call me an artist, I feel really uncomfortable. I don't want to be an artist. It's not something that defines me or it feel. I also think that when people say, call you or call me an artist, they are trying to evade the problem of magic.
Hmm.
It's easier to dump magic into art, which means, no, he's weird. You know, he likes weird things.
Yeah. But it's okay. He's an artist. It's allowed.
He's an artist. Exactly. It's allowed. And then, of course, I feel that prevent us from dealing with what is magic and how we deal with it in a world that somehow forgot about it. Mm-hmm. It seems not to need it, and maybe we don't need it. I don't know. I was talking to a friend of mine, and he's working with this guy who is designing an algorithm for happiness.
Okay.
And of course, I hear that, and I only hear pataphysics, imaginary solutions, science fiction. But this guy is serious, you know. And then I realize, well, but then an algorithm that you design and you sell to the government or you sell to the people on Wall Street to make more money is a spell.
Yeah.
It has the same value that a spell used to have. So there is always a space where the promise of magic is being fulfilled. But it may not be the place or the space we think it is. It may not be expressed in the way we would like it to be expressed or the way we think it's being expressed.
It's that person's a modern-day John Dee, you know, yes. Alchemist to the Queen, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's, I don't know if it's hilarious or depressing or both. But it is, yes.
All of those things and something else, perhaps, right? Yeah, it's interesting because people often come around looking for magic. You know, when people come for readings, whether it is the magic of the answer or the magic of, you know, of clarity or something like that, or knowing the future, or whether it's something more practical, like please tell me what to like bathe in to make my life turn around. You know, there is this search for magic that's there, I find, at least anyway, with people in the cards all the time.
Oh, no, I agree with you, and I think it's it's funny because I think that one problem I have with the magicians, maybe, or sorcerers, or people who practice that kind of magic in which you bat on something, or you wear something, you put something on, or carry a little thing with you, is that I realize that they don't believe in poetry. I mean, those are all poetic gestures. They are gestures that are based on metaphor or analogy, and the idea, the similarity between things in the world, you know, you want to travel, carry a little toy plane in your pocket, and it's similar to curando. It's sympathetic magic, you know. It's I was reading the other day a beautiful idea that if you take the tongue of a bird, you dry it out and you put it inside of your shoe in such a way that you are stepping on it. As long as you wrote the name of a certain person on the tongue, you will render that person mute.
Right.
Of course, I say that aloud, and I think I'm saying poetry. It's fantastic, beautiful poetry. But these guys have no sense of beauty. They actually expect it to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or for example, you know, you have old grimoires where there are lists of words that are good to be written on cheese. So you can eat them, and then they will have an effect on you. Or words that are good to be written on bread. And I think those are fantastic poetic projects. But no, they take it literally. They expect that to change their lives in a way that is practical, which is, well, strange.
Do you think that there can be a connection between poetry and practicality?
Well, I don't know. I think it's as a craft, poetry is very practical. Poetry is not too different from carpentry. You have to bang things together, fix them into place, and make them work. But I think that even in terms of jumping from poetry to the tarot, what I think that I can expect from it at a practical level, in a practical sense, is to, through those things, through those practices, you develop an elastic mind, develop a poetic mind. When we think about it, dreaming, it seems to be the natural mode or state of the mind. We're dreaming all the time. We are asleep, we're dreaming, we're awake, we're dreaming. There are images coming and going through our heads all the time. And I feel that those images allude to the difference between what we can see as a dense world, which is the world of the table, of the headphones, the, you know, those all those jars you have behind you, the you know, everything that is tangible and solid. And then there is a subtle, more subtle world. That is that world of images that are somehow, to some extent, always mirror deep. You know, they are just images. Mm-hmm. You take those images, pull them aside, there's just more images.
Yeah.
So it's images in a dream, like tarot cards. They have no backs. You don't turn the fool around and you see the other aspect of the fool. You just see the back of the card. It's like when you turn a mirror around and it doesn't reflect you anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think that there is something very practical about understanding that world of forms, because it allows you to understand that that world of symbols is in constant change. You know, mm-hmm. your headphones will never become a bird and flew away. But in dreams, in images, in that subtle world, your headphones could become a bird and fly away.
Well, isn't this podcast a bird that might fly all over the world, right?
You yes, know? Exactly. Well, it's funny because the voice, which is what this is now, we are creating voice, making something true with our voices. The voice is concrete, but it's invisible. Mm-hmm. And I think that I like forms or ways to bring immaterial things to the world. And of course, to be responsible for, I mean, we have to be responsible for the immaterial things we bring to the world, but we are also responsible for the symbolic world. That world of dreams that are always shifting, is, if it's wonderful or horrible, it's our fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, have we birthed something delightful, or is it a Frankenstein monster that you know, makes everybody afraid?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I on one level, I feel that one reason to look at tarot cards or words or read poetry, look at paintings, is to have a form of conversation, be it talking about the weather. I at the moment, I'm not really interested in talking to people who cannot make me dream. Mm. I want to be in that state all the time, be inspired by wonderful sightings and ideas and thoughts and words. And I think that we train ourselves to acquire the ability to create beauty through the things we say. I think that the not only poetry but also the tarot itself serves in that regard a very practical purpose. Mm.
Well, I think too for me, magic serves that purpose as well, right? You know, if we you know, when I'm doing magical things with clients, I'm looking to get them into that dream space. You know, I'm looking to knock them out of their linear timeline and get them to recognize, you know, in your language, some absurdity. I would tend to refer to it as mystery just directly, you know, but to recognize something that allows them to deconstruct that sense of who they are and see what might be kind of, you know, what nail has somebody put through their foot that's holding them in place, so that they can, you know, psychically pull a pair of pliers out and remove it and get on with their life.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I mean, again, it's about learning to be comfortable in a world of metaphor, in a world of symbols, images. But I also think that, you know, the Italians, they say it in a beautiful way. They say, mutando riposa. And that means, by changing, it rests. Which is a beautiful way to, because once you're there, you understand life. It's not only that you understand dreams or symbols or images and tarot cards, but you understand life. Life is changing all the time, and there is a big deal of growing up, I guess, in the true sense of the term, is to accept that everything is changing always. And coming to terms with that
in a almost joyful way.
Yeah, I mean, it's it reminds me of the progression from simile to metaphor, and then perhaps on to metonymy. You know, you slide from state to state where each one allows a more sophisticated and, to a certain extent, less concrete way of relating to the world, but it allows more to be conveyed in every progression along that kind of line.
Yes. Yeah. Well, which is. I guess the way you describe it, I see it as it's a way of a magician that gets better and better, conjuring what he tries to do, and so again, it's a very I know it's very abstract, and I realize that most of my time I deal in abstractions, but I also think that it's very practical. I have told this before, but I spend many years doing readings for people next to a window, sitting, you know, on a table next to a window, next to a garden, and in this garden there was this big tree. And people will come every day and they will unload their questions on the table, you know, about work, boyfriends, neighbors, Thanksgiving dinners that were horrible, you know. And I will keep looking at the tree. And after years, what I learned is that trees have no questions. You know, and they know how to grow. You can see a determination in the tree, and to some extent, a lack of doubt. And then you realize, oh, but the tree knows, you know, that the branches mirror the roots. And everything is in everything, and everything happens in a certain way, and it gives you a lot of comfort.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the tree knows what to do as the seasons change, right? Now comes the time to drop my leaves. Now comes the time to do something else.
And yes, I used to be jealous of the lack of anxiety I perceive on that tree, because, you know, the tree is not, doesn't go around saying, oh my God, this winter, will I be able to take all my leaves, let them fall? No, I mean, he knows that will happen. Life is like that for everybody, not only for trees. Things happen. Life works in a certain way and happens in a certain way. And sometimes the questions we ask about it, there are just noise, space in between ourselves and the actual thing that is happening.
Mm-hmm. And that's where that rest comes in, right?
Yeah.
So I'm curious how it was to have that movie made about you. How was that process of, you know, because it you know, the movie both, you know, as we say, projects into the future, it concretized things in a certain way. And yet it also could trigger all sorts of openness in many people. So I'm very curious, how was that process for you?
Well, it was weird. It was strange. For almost 2 years, I walk around with Chris next to me. I tried. I mean, he was great. And he was very respectful of a few rules that I imposed in the process. One of them was, we'll never film inside of my house. Mm-hmm. And we never show me sitting on a table with tarot cards.
Right.
Which was it wasn't a tough sell because he got it immediately, but I told him, I mean, we need to think about this in different terms. So to present the natural traditional image of a fortune teller on a table with a spread of cards goes against the idea of the movie, which is the tarot is not on the table, the tarot is in the world, it's everywhere. But he was very respectful, he understood that, and then, well, we went to, it was a strange playground, because every day I will have to come up with things to give him, you know, let's walk on this street, let's, I don't know, toss these letters here and there, now I'm going to walk there and I'm going to point to something. So it was a creative process, and it was like, in that regard, a co-creation. But also for me, it was very interesting because halfway through that process, I realized this is Chris's project.
Mm.
And I'm only part of a landscape that he somehow is creating. So I spend the other half of the process detaching myself from it and accepting this movie is going to be whatever Chris wants it to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy with the movie, and I appreciative of the whole process, but I'm also very happy to feel a certain detachment from it. I also actually, something that is talking about the future and all that, something that to me is very precious about the movie is this idea that maybe in 10, 20 years, 50 years, my kids will watch it and will remember a life we had.
Mm.
For example, there is a moment in the movie when I'm writing big letters on a wall and I'm wearing a denim vest that I gave to my son and he carries it around. So I wonder if in 20 years he will remember. You know, there are small things, but things that somehow connect us with a reality, a moment of time. So I like that idea of the movie being some sort of memory.
Hmm. Do your children play with the cards at all?
No. They you know, my parent philosophy is to step aside. Mm-hmm. I notice a direction in them. They want to go a certain way, and I just move aside so they can go where they want to go. If I feel that direction is dangerous or conflictive, I may try to help. But I try not to create anything through them. They are living their own lives. Mm-hmm. So they have to express any desire to play with the cards. They are familiar with them. They know them. They don't call it the tarot. They call those cards my cards. No, somebody has your cards.
Mm.
And they are aware of them. I haven't ever taught them or somehow it's just part of the landscape of the home. They are here all the time.
Right. It's like you have a wooden spoon in your kitchen as well, probably. Right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, you know, as a parent myself, you know, the kids kind of come and go from them in my place. There's always a deck somewhere within arm's reach, and sometimes they, pick them up and play with them, and sometimes in periods of times they don't, you know. And my 6-year-old has been, well, now 7-year-old, has been making her own cards, which is really great, you know. And the best thing about them is the poetry, you know. She made the 9 of happy to be going camping tomorrow, you know.
You know,
the card that is the joy of getting the top bunk, you know. Different things like that, you know. And there's a little drawing, and she'll write some words on them, or you know, whatever. So yeah, it's quite fun.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like that.
So I one of the reasons I wanted to talk with you, I mean, aside from, you know, generally having enjoyed our chats on Facebook and other places like that, is I really love the way in which the open-endedness and the playfulness and, you know, the absurdity of things. And as I was thinking about interviewing you and having this conversation, I started coming up with a list of questions that I thought we might run through.
Okay.
As a way of having fun and provoking and seeing what might come out of it. Does that sound amenable to you?
Yes, of course.
All right. So when I was thinking of this, I was thinking of it as, give me a short answer, like a lightning round, as it were. But as we've been talking, want to sort of step back from that and say, give me whatever answer feels appropriate. Okay.
Yeah, I apologize because I know I tend to talk a lot. So,
not at all. No, it's fascinating and it's great. It's it's not about that at all. It's more so that what I thought of as something that might be short and kind of funny, Yes. I would like to open up to be whatever it is, to take my controls off it, allow the questions to run free and see if they what they provoke. Okay? All right. So my first question for you is M-dash or N-dash? Which is your favorite?
I like dash in general because it contains ashes.
Pastiche or pistachio?
See, that's beautiful. I like that. Yeah, I will go up with the pistachios.
Pistachios. Yeah. Excellent. What's the perfect card size?
The what, sir?
The perfect card size.
Well, just half of it.
Which Marseille deck?
All of them and none of them. And by the way, if you don't mind, I truly don't believe there is a right Tarot de Marseille.
Absolutely.
It's like the saying that Helvetica is the right typography, but Bodoni is wrong. It's the same alphabet.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's even more like saying, you know, Helvetica new is better than, you know, the other Helvetica. It's like, you know, they're all a good font if they're good for the job at hand.
Like that, exactly. It's like perfect.
Mm-hmm. What is the Emperor's favorite ice cream?
I think it's you know, it's funny because in Venezuela where I come from there was the best ice creams were from this place that was called 4D. So you ask that question and all I see is the number 4 on the emperor, in front of the emperor. Not only he's the number 4, but for example in the Jean Dodal there is an actual number 4. So I'm assuming he's going there to have ice cream.
Excellent. Anyway. How many rings should a tarot reader be wearing at any given time?
Well, I think probably none, but I have 4.
Excellent. Back to the Emperor again.
Yes.
Sorry,
I try to bless some days, but I really like my rings. And now I was told that the guy who made my rings is going out of business, or is a third generation silversmith. They were there for 53 years, and now I'm told that they are going to turn their business into an online business. Hmm. So I now somehow appreciate my rings better.
Excellent. What's your favorite vowel?
I think the O, because the letter O is not only a vowel, but it's everything. It's an eye, it's a mouth, it's a nostril, it's a pond, and it's a tunnel. But it's also the mandorla in the world. So in a sense, you can say, if you know, you have the O and you have the X. And with those two letters, not only you can draw the entire alphabet, but also with a circle and a cross inside, you have the foundation for most magical operations in most of magical practices around the world.
Mm-hmm. And you can always sign off with terms of endearments, X's and O's, hugs and kisses.
Exactly. Well, I always find that so weird, you know, that X's and O's are hugs and kisses, because those are the in a sense, the foundational letters, the X and the O.
Well, you know, magic is revealing itself everywhere all the time, right? We're just not seeing it, maybe, or maybe we are.
Exactly. Yeah, I guess if you have the eye or the ear for it, it's everywhere, you know, it's... you start seeing alchemy in anything that people do effectively, or magic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you want to chat about? Is there anything else on your mind here as we're reaching the end of our conversation?
Well, no, I can tell you about at the moment I'm working on a project that gets me inspired. And it has to do with dreams. You know, I stop giving readings to people and I focus on teaching tarot, basically hoping that what people will get from it is that elastic, poetic mind. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily that you learn how to read tarot so you can go and work at parties or psychic fairs. That works too. But it's more about creating or generating or opening that understanding of that poetic mind. And something that started happening recently is that I get emails from people that says that they had a dream with me, and in the dream I gave them a tarot lesson, which is great because now I can add, you know, dream instruction to emails and telephone. Mm-hmm. Then I have decided to claim those dreams as my literary work. So I have decided that, you know, it's going back to the letter X, you know, if you draw a letter X on the air and you draw it again and again, you realize that you found infinity. It's the lemniscate. Mm. You know, but then if you take the X out of the lemniscate, you only end with parentheses. So in a sense, you could say, well, infinity is anything you put into between parentheses. So I decided to put myself between parentheses about 15 years ago when I decided I would wear the same, I would dress the same, look the same, go to the same places, do the same things over and over and over every day, which is what I do. Every morning I wake up, I get dressed, drop the kids to school, go to a cafe where I write my poetry, I read, I look at cards, and eventually, what I realize is the best way to generate a swear is by remaining constant. Hmm. So my repetition of my own actions over and over and over, which to me equals to living the life of a ghost, you know, I appear at the same places at the same times looking the same way, is my way to become imaginary, which is my highest aspiration, is to that at some point somebody will mention me, another person will say, that's preposterous, that guy never existed. So when I got the first dream, I was very happy because I say, see, now I'm returning, somebody's returned my own image to myself as a product of their own imagination, so I'm becoming an imaginary. Then these dreams kept coming. And I have decided they are that. They are a form of literature that I am generating just by repeating myself to them.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, that's what I'm working on at the moment.
I like it a lot. I think that's really wonderful. I actually had somebody reach out to me this week. The first time in a long time somebody reached out to me and said, oh, I had a dream where you were in it the other day. And, yeah, so it was very interesting.
So. It's really strange, yes, especially because in these dreams, what I do in the dreams is something I can live with, you know, because when somebody tells you, well, you know, you were in my dream, the first thing I think is, where I was naked? Is that an okay dream? What was happening?
Exactly.
And no, these are dreams in which I'm very consistent with the things I like, so it makes, it's a relief at the very least to know that I was just dressed and teaching tarot or weird things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's strange. I never really pay too much attention to dreams, but I still don't. I mean, in the sense of, you know, when people ask you, you know, I dreamt of my teeth were falling. What does that mean? I don't know. I mean, go to a dentist or, you know, play the number 3 in the lottery. But I think it's, there is something interesting if you understand that the boundary between what we call dreams and reality is not really that dense, and it's not here and there. It's, everything is here. Everything is the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, dreams are just like the cards, right? If we're trying to create a concrete dictionary of dream meanings, you know, and it's not that maybe there's not value in those books that have been published for some people, but for me, it's always, well, what does that mean? What does it remind you of? You know, it leads to questions that lead to things that can be interesting, as opposed to looking it up and being like, oh, you know, I lost my teeth. It means, you know, something specific.
Yeah. Well, it's I guess, again, meaning is just one part of the equation, but we can also do without meaning. And I always feel that when we look at a card, forget about what it means. Focus on what it is. There is an event in front of you. It would be great if you can have a first hand experience of that event, which we do, for example, when we go out in the woods and we look at a landscape or a sunset, we don't turn around and ask, what's the meaning of that? Mm-hmm. No, there is no meaning behind. We experience that, and somehow that experience is pleasant or intriguing or amusing, or it opens possibilities outside of itself, which is the whole point. But so with dreams it's the same, and people, you know, usually people write to me and say, I love this, actually. They find cards, especially I have this relationship with one woman who keeps finding cards on the street, so I read her cards only when she finds cards on the street. Mm-hmm. Which I like as going back to the beginning, as a job description, I read cards people find on the street. I like that better than mm-hmm. anything. And but sometimes, you know, they write and they mention, like, they found this card and somebody told them or gave them such card. What's the meaning of that card? And the truth is, I don't know. I mean, for example, the other day, this lady wrote to me and said, you know, I'm dealing with this. This is a real story. She has this boyfriend that is, she doesn't know where she stands because it's a weird relationship. And then she's thinking on this, and then she goes out and she found on the street the lover's card. Mm. And to me, it's more, that is in itself the message. What the cards in itself mean is not necessarily important.
Right.
If you pull back and you look at that as a movie scene, or sort of the scene, if you look at it as literature, you realize it's a beautiful scene, and that should be enough.
So last year I was out walking around and I often find playing cards, you know, around town, treat them that way, and it was raining really hard. And I saw a card, the back of a card, on the street, and I just sort of, you know, was running between the raindrops, so I just grabbed it up and stuffed it in my pocket. And when I got home, I turned it around, took it out, and the card had obviously, like, delaminated, right? So the face was gone. And I was like, oh, okay, it's very interesting. So it was a blank card, right? And I, you know, and my logical mind, my rational mind, was like insistent. And for like the, you know, that night, and you know, I was like fixated. I was like, what card was it though? What, it had to be a card. It had a face. What was it, right? And so I went back that way to see if maybe the card face was still around the next day when I left the house, and it was. I found it, you know, sort of nearby, and when I picked it up and turned it around, it was the Joker.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So what a perfect set of bookends to that experience, right?
That's fantastic, yes. That's what I mean. I think that I do believe that cards are literary devices, but not only because you can look at cards and then compose stories or poems based on what the cards say or do, but also because as soon as you put a deck of tarot cards in your pocket, you become literature. And that, what you're telling me, is just a beautiful scene again. It's a literary scene. I mean, it's a guy looking for the face of a card outside in the rain. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know it wasn't raining, but I put it there because I like to cheat a little.
Sure, why not? It's a poetic license.
Yes, exactly. But, you know, that scene, I mean, the idea, I mean, the image of a person looking for the face of a card, which in itself is a completely absurd or bizarre notion, you know, is a card that lost its face. It's in itself a very intriguing, very beautiful notion. So thank you for that. You just made my day.
Excellent. Well, I've certainly enjoyed chatting with you.
Thank you.
If people want to come and find you, where would you like them to show up online? Where might be helpful?
I think the easiest way is maybe to find me on Facebook.
Okay.
Which is, you keep hearing people hating Facebook and talking horrible about technology and social media and how we are being separated by social media. But the fact is, I'm talking to you, mm-hmm. which would have been impossible without social media. And I have many friends and dear relationships that only exist because social media exists. So I see Facebook as the street. It's just another block, another, you know, you turn a corner, you find yourself in Facebook, walking mm-hmm. around. So people can just find me there, friend me there, and I have a weekly
mailing list. I send a little bit of my wordplay or my poetry work once a week to my list of people. So if people befriend me on Facebook, we can talk about getting on that list. And of course, it will be a pleasure. But I think that's the easiest way. I don't have a website. I don't have a blog. I eliminate all those things because I had no use for them.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, I'll make sure I include a street intersection for them to go look you up on Facebook then in the podcast notes.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. This was great.
Thank you. So I want to thank you for listening to this podcast. I certainly hope that you enjoyed it. I had a wonderful time chatting with Enrique, and I think that despite sometimes the lack of direct connection between reading the cards and as most people think about it, and you know what we talked about, I think that it is all incredibly relevant to the process of learning how to understand the cards and live with the cards. So please let me know how it goes. Please let me know your thoughts. Do me a favor, and if you know anybody who would be interested in this, please send them a link or let them know about it. And even more to the point, please let me know what you're getting out of it, how it's going for you. You know, I'm around on Facebook and other places. Drop me a line and let me know if it's helping you, what you're excited about, you know, what's firing you up about this process. I'm getting a lot of great feedback. If there's somebody you think that I should have on the show, please do send me a suggestion and I will reach out to them and see if they're a good fit for the show. Again, thank you for listening. Have a great week. See you soon.